Hello, I'm Steve Wiggins, and this is podcast number 20 of the Sex and Violence in the Ancient World blog. Today's topic is going to be how religions change. In the past few weeks, I've been doing a lot of reading on the Zoroastrians. The Zoroastrians are perhaps an underappreciated ancient religion, partially because their early history is unfortunately not has not been written down by the adherents to the religion themselves. The peoples of ancient, what used to be Persia, in all likelihood, ancient not only ancient Iran, but also ancient Afghanistan, did not adopt writing early on in their history, and so they had no written documents to record who they were or what their belief system was. And Western scholars have tended to, until recently, look at the other ancient religions from the Middle East, religions from ancient Mesopotamia, ancient Aram or ancient Syria, that is, and ancient Israel, as being perhaps more influential than, say, those of the farther eastern regions of the realm. And so they tended to be ignored. We do know that Zoroastrianism continues to exist today. It's not a very large religion, but there are many faithful adherents to it. And we do know that it has very ancient roots. Some scholars would go as far as to say that Zoroastrianism is actually the earliest continuously attested religion that exists anywhere in the world. Well, I'm not really qualified to comment on that. But I do know that from what we are able to learn about Zoroastrianism, that the religion itself was a very influential belief system that influenced not only other religions of the ancient Near East, but also modern-day religions in various ways. One of the interesting developments in Zoroastrianism, and one of the reasons that they're a good place to begin a discussion of how religions change, is the dilemma that the religion faced when it came into contact with the, shall we say, new learning of people who lived a little bit further to the west than where the religion began. Zoroastrianism, quite apart from having a basic cosmic dualism, which teaches that there's a good principle and an evil principle that are in a constant struggle with each other, also has this idea that the fire itself, the fire, is a form of divinity. In other words, it is a manifestation, if you will, of the goodness of creation. And that belief is central to the tenets of ancient Zoroastrianism, and it has perhaps modified a bit throughout time, but it does illustrate the dilemma that religions face when new knowledge is acquired. One of the biggest difficulties that Zoroastrianism faced as time went on was that other people who eventually came into contact with these ancient regions of ancient Persia would bring with them new developments, many of which involved the use of fire. This was particularly so once the Industrial Revolution began, and so we're talking about a change that would need to take place in the religion up until only fairly recent times, in the history of religions anyway, comparatively speaking, a fairly recent development. And that is that many of the developments of the Industrial Revolution involved the use of fire. Now, fire in Zoroastrianism was understood to come in many different forms, including the sun and the hearth fire, the one that would keep you warm and secure in the cold of the night, as well as the ones that were kept burning in the ritual life of the religion. Now, one of the principles was that you did not use fire for hard labor. In other words, you could use it for cooking, yes, but to put fire to work be tantamount to showing great disrespect for a major deity. And when people from other parts of the world, particularly Europeans, started to travel to regions of Persia and wanting to establish trade relationships and such, and they came and showed steam engines and other forms of mechanization that employed fire for very base and, in Zoroastrianites, vulgar forms of work, they were really distressed by this, because having fire itself as a divinity requires that it be treated with a great deal of respect. And so one of the great crises they had to face was, how do you deal with a world that has gone after the use of fire from purely practical purposes, as electricity, as combustion for internal combustion engines? How does this fit with the religious outlook? Now, since there are not many Zoroastrians around today, many people would say that's maybe an interesting point to raise, but not really relevant to other religions. But I would have to say I'm only using this as an illustration because all religions go through this. The ones who probably feel the pinch least are modern-day religions, ones that are currently developing in various cultures today. They will be, of course, in sync with what's going on in their own time frame, and it will take a long time before technological advances or other changes in knowledge catch up with them. But for the ancient religions, which are probably the most popular ones in the world, they're constantly having to face this question of what happens when things change. So, for example, let's take a look at Christianity. Christianity began as a religion during the period of the Roman Empire in Palestine, the Levant, many centuries ago, of course. The issues that were relevant to early Christians were not the issues that are relevant to people today, issues such as abortion or capital punishment or evolution. These issues simply did not exist. So instead, what we have is a world that was basically centered on the idea of how do you survive under foreign oppression when that oppression is Roman. And of course, Roman thought and Roman culture are largely the basis for our own culture in the United States and in much of the Western world. So in a sense, we would have been the enemy for early Christianity in many respects. And so this religion was trying to figure out how to survive in a conflicted situation, a situation where they were the enemy. They were the ones seen as being behind the times. They were the ones who were not fully up to speed on what the Romans were trying to develop. And so when we look at Christianity today as the cultural force that it is, and it's a major cultural force in much of the Western world, still a major force in the United States in any case, we see that it is very slow to accept radical new developments. Now, this isn't itself unusual because religions by their very nature are conservative, especially revealed religions, because the idea is that the religion in its full and complete form was revealed to the founder, and that founder had the truth in absolute terms, and therefore any development that takes place after the founding of the religion has to be somehow secondary or even tertiary, maybe even falling out of the scale altogether, as concerns what the original teaching was. Now, we do know that religions do not stay the same for long. There's a very obvious difference between the religion of, say, Paul and the religion of Jesus, who was the founder, of course, of Christianity. In some cases, people have even claimed that Paul is the true founder of Christianity and that Jesus is merely kind of a figurehead for the religion that developed in the first century of the Common Era. But in any case, we do know that religions are really slow to change because if you accept change rapidly, it tends to throw doubt on the early stages of your religion. If we are right about certain things, what does that imply about the beliefs of, say, a Paul or a Peter or a Jesus even concerning what happened when Christianity was first founded? And again, the same principle can be applied to other religions as well, because they also change over time or have to face the changes that go on around them. So in other words, in short of a radical kind of apocalypse where the world stops as soon as a religion begins, religions are going to have to face change. Some have done it more successfully than others. Usually, if the change is slow enough, it's not really a big issue because it happens at such a glacial pace that the members of a religious belief, a religious community belief, don't really have a chance to react against it very strongly because the changes are slow and gradual and they just pass by unnoticed. But if we stop to think about the things that we take for granted today that early Christianity did not have to deal with, it gives us an idea of just what a radical change to the religion that we have today is. So, for example, the early Christians had no idea about the scientific revolution. They had no concept of outer space. I mean, stop to think about their worldview, which is basically a three-tiered universe, which involved an earth, an underworld, and a heavenly kind of dome above it. Even the idea of heaven and hell, which were fairly new developments in early Christianity, had been borrowed from Zoroastrianism. And so these ideas were beyond their comprehension. The idea of outer space, other galaxies. I tell my students every semester, we in this world, in our culture, did not know what other galaxies were until the 1920s. It seems rather strange that there are people alive today who lived before other galaxies were discovered or were understood to be what they are. Edwin Hubble in the 1920s discovered what galaxies are. So we can't presume that the people in ancient world had any idea how large our universe was. At the same time, they had no idea how small it was either. They couldn't fathom the idea of molecules, which you cannot see with the naked eye, let alone atoms or subatomic particles. The whole quantum world was a complete mystery to them. They didn't understand how disease would pass from person to person or how they could be prevented by natural means. To them, these were the signs of a divine displeasure. Or if we take it even further, such diseases as epilepsy were not understood. There do seem to be some instances of ancient people who understood brain damage and tried through various forms of surgery to rectify that. But generally speaking, most ancient people were far more inclined to assign epilepsy to demonic possession than to some neurological disorder. Or if we were to think even in other terms, we could think about the whole genome and DNA. These things were not understood. They didn't understand how inheritance worked or how ideas, or not ideas, but how biological traits passed on from generation to generation or the implications of that. They didn't understand evolution. We now know that it is the way that the world operates, with the exception of only a few people in North America particularly who are influenced by their view of the Bible and its ultimate place in the cosmos of being the sole document that is right all the time. Most people realize that organisms evolve. Even our fundamentalist friends are really willing to admit that microevolution does occur. They're just afraid of macroevolution. As time goes on, of course, the evidence becomes stronger and stronger, and it's only a matter of time before the religion finally has to come to accept that this is indeed the way the world works. Or even on a more basic level, what about gravity? Even those in the first century people that lived during the time of the founding of Christianity had no idea how gravity worked. They didn't know what it was. They just knew that things fell to the ground. We have to wait until Sir Isaac Newton before we get a basic idea of how that works. And even Newton, we know, is not correct according to Einstein's theory about how gravitation works. So all of these ideas, which we take for granted and we assume every day when we deal with our daily lives, when we turn the key to the ignition in our cars, when we pick up our cell phones, when we turn on our televisions or computers, we assume that all of this works because we know that it's been tried and tested by science and that science demonstrates that this is the way the laws of physics work, that's the way our world works, and we accept that. Yet at the same time, our religion has not been able to keep pace with this development. Our religion is still a first century belief system. It's a modified first century belief system, but it still has its origins in a very different world. And as the time slowly changed between the first century and the 21st century, things have grown more and more comfortable in some areas. We simply accept certain things. We no longer get very upset about the fact that sunrise and sunset are metaphors and that we know that it's really our earth that's spinning. Although the Bible doesn't realize that. For the Bible, sunrise and sunset are quite literal. But we've accepted that. We've grown comfortable with that ever since Copernicus. And if not Copernicus, at least since Galileo, people had to admit that there was really truth to this whole idea. The explanatory value of astronomy has given us a universe we recognize and comprehend as the one we live in today. But other areas of our religious development have stagnated. My observation about this is that those areas of religion that are holding back, those that drag their heels, are those that have most recently been introduced, and also those that have, in a strange way, come into the area of being politically motivated religious beliefs. And this is a fairly recent development as well. Religion did not play a major part in American politics until fairly recently in history. Our founding fathers were deists, perhaps, not really Christians in any real sense of the word, and that didn't seem to matter much to their ideal of a nation that was founded on the basis of religious freedom. So for them, this was not a big issue. But now, in today's world, religion can indeed determine the outcome of an election very easily. We've seen it happen before, and we do know that even now, as primaries are starting up, that the parties are gearing up their candidates to have the right politically correct, religiously correct answers to questions so that they can face the religious element in the voting population. And because of this connection with the concern for religiously correct outlooks on science and on society, we come face to face with our own dilemma of changing religions. The leadership in most religious bodies has no problem with evolution. The religious belief, religious leaders in most religious bodies have very little problems with science. But those that do have problems with these areas are still raising the questions that have been part of religion's difficulty from the very beginning, and that is, how do you deal with changes when the religion claims to have had the final answers from the beginning? I don't have an answer for how those who feel constrained by this view of religion can deal with it. I just simply know that it's something that we as modern people have to accept. We live every day in a kind of schizophrenic world where we accept science, but then those who are concerned about religious developments do not accept certain aspects of science because their religion tells them not to. And we need to really come to the honest conclusion that our religions, if they can't keep pace with our developments and further understanding, are going to run into trouble. Back when I taught at Neshota House, I quite often had students tell me the reason that this is a problem is that human reason is flawed. It was broken during the fall, so that human beings are incapable of rational thought, and therefore when we come to these rational conclusions that show that religion has problems, it's the reason that's at fault, not the religion itself. My answer to them was always, well, how did you come to that conclusion? Is it not by reason? And if you came to that conclusion by reason, then how can you trust that conclusion if reason is faulty? It's the age-old dilemma. If we're going to be rational beings, if we're going to have a rational future where we can learn to live together with people of all different religions, I believe it's absolutely essential that we have to come to some grips with understanding that religion needs to change in order to keep up with what society has discovered or what science has discovered in the larger society. Otherwise, our world will continue to become more and more deeply schizophrenic.